Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
The American Muslim community condemns this cowardly act. When we first saw this report, you're just hoping and praying that no Muslim has anything to do with it. We believe that no political or religious ideology could ever justify such wanton violence. This is just something that should not be used to somehow paint Muslim military personnel or the American Muslim community as somehow unpatriotic or anti-military.
That's Ibrahim Hooper, spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Is that true, that the fact that this man at Fort Hood in Texas, who killed so many, was a Muslim, is essentially irrelevant to the crime that was committed? I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, November the 9th. Join us to talk about this for the remainder of the hour. Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, author of numerous books on Islam. His latest is titled The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
It is being reported that the gunman shouted, "Allah Akbar, Allah is great," before letting loose with his murderous barrage. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me in the least, Todd, and it's been reported by several people who were on the scene. What is surprising is that nobody seems to have picked up on the significance of that. The fact is that that is something that Al-Qaeda actually directs its operatives to do. Muhammad Atta, in his final instructions to his colleagues who were among the 9/11 hijackers, he told them, remember to shout Allahu Akbar as you were beginning your jihad, because that strikes terror into the hearts of the infidels.
So what do you think happened at Fort Hood?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that this was an Islamic Jihad terrorist attack, same motives and same goals as that of 9/11, and that is made clear not only by his shouting Allahu Akbar, but by the fact that he was passing out Qurans. This is Nidal Hassan, the shooter. He was passing out Qurans on the morning of the shooting. He raised eyebrows among his colleagues telling them that suicide bombing was justified, by preaching from the Quran when he was supposed to be giving a medical lecture, and telling them that the unbelievers were going to be boiled in oil, were going to be beheaded, were going to be burnt in hell, and so on. This was supposed to be a lecture about psychiatry, and it only revealed the psychology of Nidal Hassan himself. Some people came out of there saying this guy could shoot somebody someday, but they didn't report him. Nobody did, because they were afraid of appearing bigoted or racist.
The take, at least as I am, the impression I'm getting, Robert, from kind of the popular media coverage of this is a man unhinged, and that accounts for his murderous acts. Now, I can't assess his psychological state, but is it necessary that someone devoted as he appears to have been to radical Islam be unhinged to carry out an act like this?
No. As a matter of fact, there's evidence of premeditation, which militates against the idea that he was unhinged. He gave his landlord notice a couple weeks ago saying he wasn't going to be renewing his lease. He knew he was leaving. He knew that he wouldn't be back. He'd be dead. That's what he was thinking, which is why he was giving away his furniture along with the Qurans on the morning of the attack. Unbalanced and unhinged would suggest that he might have just snapped, and went off on one point. But this is clearly a very carefully planned attack.
Tell us a little bit about, you mentioned before, the directives that Al-Qaeda gives to its operatives. Tell us a little bit about what you perceive to be the goals of an organization like Al-Qaeda.
Well, the Al-Qaeda has made their goals very clear. They have told us that what they want to do is undermine non-Muslim governments and eliminate, ultimately, all rule that is not based on Islamic law. And so they are fighting in various ways to weaken the non-Islamic governments, to demoralize the non-Islamic populations, to strike terror into the hearts of the unbelievers, as the Quran directs, so that those terrorized unbelievers will be paralyzed by fear and not able to fight back effectively as they continue to advance Islamic law in the West.
Two things on that. We are told that this is radical Islam. This is not mainstream Islam, that this is a form of Islam that has been, in the words of former President George Bush, hijacked by a totalitarian political ideology. Your response?
Well, in reality, there is no text, there is no sect, there is no teaching of Islam that is mainstream and authoritative. There is no understanding of Islam that has prevailed in the Islamic world over the last 1,400 years since Islam began that does not teach that Muslims must wage war and subjugate infidels as inferiors under the rule of Islamic law. That doesn't mean that every Muslim has always acted upon these teachings, but these teachings exist, they are mainstream, they are authoritative, and they are universal among all the sects and schools of Islamic law. And so to sweep all that aside and to say that Islam at its core is peaceful and that the teachings of violence represent some kind of twisting of Islamic teaching, well, that's just wishful thinking on a large scale, not borne out by the facts. There are peaceful Muslims, but there is no peaceful form of Islamic teaching.
Well, others have pointed out that terrorism seems a very inefficient way of achieving political goals. It generally stirs up opposition to the terrorist or their organization and their ideology. How does it make sense, at least in the Islamic mind, to carry out acts of terrorism?
Well, in the first place, it's true that it is inefficient, and that's one reason why this is not just a problem of terrorism. This is a much larger problem of Islamic groups. They were acting in many ways, and continue to do so, to spread Islamic law, to assert Islamic law here, and to reinforce the principle that where Islamic law and American law conflict, it's American law that has to give way. That is an initiative, a stealth jihad, as I call it, that continues, and most people are not paying any attention at all to that. But as far as terrorism goes, from the Islamic jihadist standpoint, it's an essential component because it keeps the infidels off balance and keeps them frightened. There are many effects of terrorism that are not immediate or obvious, but one of them is the self-censorship that, for example, when there was the huge free speech issue a few years back over cartoons of Muhammad, and many newspapers were declining to print them, they suddenly lost all their attachment to freedom of speech and decided that they would not reprint these cartoons of Muhammad that were causing riots in the Islamic world. This was an effect of terrorism because they were afraid of getting blown up. They were afraid of getting their lives threatened, even though there were no direct threats at that time. And this is an indication that terrorism works, that it makes the infidels frightened, and we allow ourselves to be frightened because we don't have the will, ultimately, to stand up to it. And this is something that will have to change if we're going to have any chance of overcoming this as a civilizational and societal threat.
What should be done, if anything, with other Muslims who serve in the U.S. military?
Well, I think that we need to start to ask them some pointed questions and to listen very carefully to the answers and to make no apologies for doing so, because there is no Muslim group in the United States, none, or anywhere else in the world for that matter, that has said, if you believe in the version of Islam preached by Osama bin Laden and others like him, then you're not welcome in this mosque, you are not welcome to come to this Islamic school, you have no presence here as a Muslim. In other words, in Christianity and Catholicism in particular, there's the old idea of excommunication. And in Islam, there is takfir, which is declaring an individual or a group to be not a Muslim, which is kind of like Islamic excommunication. Nobody has done that. No group has done that to these people who are supposedly twisting and hijacking Islam. And so that means that we cannot tell anybody. I mean, obviously, Nidal Hassan inspired enough trust in his superiors that he was able to rise to the rank of major. He didn't, even though there were warning signs along the way, he didn't scare people sufficiently enough to make them think that there was something that they needed to do in regard to him to stop his plans. That's unfortunate, but it's true. we need to start to determine, to ask the American Muslim advocacy groups to renounce jihadism, to renounce Islamic supremacism, to back up their words with deeds, transparent, inspectable programs in American mosques and schools that teach against the beliefs that Nidal Hassan had and that led him to commit mass murder. And we need to start questioning Muslims in the military in particular about their loyalty to the United States and evaluate their answers very carefully.
It's been reported that Nidal Hassan was reluctant to be deployed either to Iraq or to Afghanistan. Is it considered sinful in Islam to kill fellow Muslims?
Yes. Chapter 4, verse 92 of the Quran forbids Muslims to kill fellow Muslims. And so this is something that all the sects and schools of Islam here, again, take very seriously. And they do not allow this. There's no way that this can be done and one can remain a faithful Muslim. So this is something that was clearly uppermost in Nidal Hassan's mind. But one has to also remember, he joined the U.S. military at a certain point. He had to know, since we've been in conflict with Iraq off and on since the early 90s, he had to know that this was a possibility, and he had to have had in the back of his mind, therefore, that maybe this would be something he was going to do all along. He could have just gotten out of the military. He didn't have to enter it in the first place.
Okay, that raises a question, and when we come back from this break, I want Robert Spencer's answer. If it is sinful to kill fellow Muslims, and a Muslim believes this, he enters the U.S. military aware of the fact that he will likely have to fight against, if not kill, fellow Muslims on the enemy side, it does raise a question of scrutinizing the loyalty of Muslims who serve in the U.S. military. We'll see what Robert Spencer has to say about that on the other side of the break. We're talking about last week's attack by a Muslim soldier at Fort Hood, Texas. Robert Spencer is our guest, director of Jihad Watch, author of numerous books on Islam, his latest titled The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. I just wonder, I know what political correctness will say. It will say you can't scrutinize the loyalty of Muslims. Then you need to go in and scrutinize the loyalty of Christians, Buddhists, Jewish soldiers as well, because if you're going to scrutinize the loyalty of one religious group in the military, you need to scrutinize all. Or is Islam a different case? Robert Spence will also answer that question after this.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to instantly share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page and click Share This.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2010. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. 300.
This is an unfortunate random act of violence. I think everybody's looking for a why answer, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think there's a why answer.
We don't know enough to say now, but there are very, very strong warning signs here that Dr. Hassan had become an Islamist extremist, and therefore that this was a terrorist act.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about last week's attack by a Muslim soldier at Fort Hood, Texas. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Monday afternoon, November the 9th. Our guest, Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, author of numerous books on Islam, including his latest titled The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You said something before the break, Robert, that kind of sparked a pretty big question, and that is, if it is sinful for Muslims to kill fellow Muslims, absolutely in the Quran, and a Muslim entering the military has to know that he will likely be called upon to fight against and even kill a Muslim on the enemy side, you said we need to scrutinize the loyalty of Muslims serving in the military. Connect that last dot for us, if you will.
Well, see, there's no reliable way to tell an Islamic jihadist or a potential Islamic jihadist like Nida Hassan from somebody who is a completely loyal American who is a Muslim. And so given that, we have to ask questions, and we have to ask questions based on these assumptions. And so, you know, I think we should be asking American Muslims in the military, do you have any problem fighting against fellow Muslims in Iraq or Afghanistan? And not just take a yes or no answer for at face value, but also try to determine by the person's attitude, behavior, and associations where he really stands on this issue, because you know, lives are at stake here. The deaths that Nidal Hassan caused are an indication of just what the cost of political correctness and the myopia and the fog that blankets us on this issue, what the cost of that really is.
So how do you explain the fact that although there were some rather alarming warning signs on the part of Major Hassan, his behavior, his, things he had to say that are now being reported, the military didn't seem to be terribly concerned about him?
Todd, I'll tell you why. The answer to that is very simple and very important to note. The answer is they didn't. Nobody complained. Nobody reported this guy because they knew if they did so, they would be tarred as bigots and racists and Islamophobes. The Council on American Islamic Relations and other Islamic advocacy groups in the United States have carried out a very successful campaign since 9/11 and before that also to demonize and to stigmatize anybody who speaks honestly about the Islamic Jihad threat in the United States. And they have successfully intimidated people into thinking, ordinary people all over the country, that to speak about these things, to note suspicious behavior on the part of Muslims or suspicious statements is hateful, and so they must not do it. And so this is the quintessential sacrifice on the altar of political correctness. Political correctness and our blinders about the issue of Islamic Jihad have now cost 13 dead and 38 wounded at Fort Hood.
Did Nidal Hassan necessarily have to have a direct connection to a group like al-Qaeda in order to understand what was expected of him by Islam of that stripe?
No, he didn't have to. All he had to do was read the Quran and understand the teachings of Muhammad. These things all Muslims learn if they are pious and devout and they take the trouble to learn them. And then he would see that there's a necessity to wage war against unbelievers that is embedded in the Quran. And that is something that is presented in the Quran as an obligation that all Muslims must carry out.
What kind of questions do you suggest, I mean, off the top of your head, we direct toward Muslims serving in the military in order to determine one way or another on this issue?
Well, I think that there ought to be a series of questions based on various Islamic doctrines. One Islamic doctrine is the necessity to wage war against unbelievers until they either convert to Islam or submit to the rule of the Muslims as inferiors. And so that ought to be something that ought to be asked about. There ought to be questions asked about America's alliance with Israel and whether that's something that Muslims would be willing to fight on the side of America and Israel against Muslim states and Muslim individuals. Questions about the hatred and contempt for infidels that is manifested throughout the Quran, which calls the infidels the most vile of created beings in chapter 98, verse 6, would they have trouble obeying an infidel commanding officer under those circumstances when they're taught to have hatred and contempt for him? Now, Islamic spokesmen will say, oh, no, that's in the Quran, and I'm distorting it and taking it out of context and so on. Well, I challenge anybody. Look up the verses. I just told you, chapter 98, verse 6, chapter 9, verse 29, mandates warfare against Jews and Christians for Muslims, and it's not based on that they have a bad foreign policy or anything like that. It is just fight the Jews and Christians simply because they are not Muslims. And so these things are in the Quran, these matters of objective verification. We need to start speaking about them honestly and calling the American Muslim community to account for them and to formulate new understandings of them that are compatible with the U.S. Constitution.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, what you're suggesting there is, in effect, religious discrimination in the military?
No, because I'm talking about political doctrines. I'm talking about doctrines that have to do with the fact that Islam is a political and social system, as well as an individual religious faith, and that it is in its nature, and inherent in it is this political extension, but that is the part that is threatening to infidels that we need to ask Muslims about, and we need to limit and restrict in the United States. But that's a political thing. That's like limiting and restricting communism in the United States during the Cold War. But the individual practice of Islam as a matter of personal piety need not and should not be restricted.
What do you suggest could have been done on the part of the military? We're not military experts, but just in terms of knowledge of Islam and acting upon what they knew, what could have been done to prevent Nidal Hassan's murderous rampage?
I think that they should have removed him from his position and given him a court-martial and dishonorably discharged him when he started making anti-American statements and defending the idea that Muslims should carry out suicide attacks against American soldiers and that Muslims should rise up against the U.S. military. That's no way for a major in the United States Army to be talking under any circumstances, Muslim, non-Muslim, whatever. And he ought to have been subject to penalties that he only evaded because political correctness made it impossible for him to be prosecuted for that kind of thing.
Well, when
it had been a non-Muslim speaking in the same way, if it had been a non-Muslim saying the same statements, then there certainly would have been action taken by his superiors.
When we look back on this, what is the lesson that we need to learn from last week's attack by a Muslim soldier in Fort Hood, Texas?
The main lesson we need to learn is that we need to start speaking honestly about the nature of Islamic Jihad, its deep roots within Islamic doctrine, and its deep roots in the American Muslim community, and start to, as we speak honestly, to call the American Muslim community to take positive steps to fight against these doctrines within their community, or they're going to be subject to all the scrutiny and penalties that political groups, not religious groups, are subject to in the United States, and that existing sedition laws that are on the books now will be enforced against them to protect the U.S. Constitution and our freedoms.
Do you see that happening either in the military leadership or in the civilian leadership of the military?
Not in this lifetime.
Why not?
Because of the blanket stranglehold that political correctness has on both those establishments.
It seems odd, Robert. We got about a minute here. Strange bedfellows, political correctness and radical Islam.
The left thinks that they can ride that tiger. The left thinks that they can win. They can use them to destroy conservatism and the American right, and then they will be able to control them. They are very, very, very naive in that regard.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch, author of numerous books on Islam. His latest is titled The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can purchase The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, issuesetc.org. Robert Spencer, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
Folks, consider for a moment, as we come to the end of this hour on this Monday afternoon, the not only the breadth, but also the quality of the guests you've listened to just in the last hour of this first day of this week of Issues Etc. We had Representative Bart Stupak talking about the amendment that forbid federal funding for abortion in health care. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery was with us, international human rights lawyer, and Robert Spencer, one of the foremost authorities on Islam. And it's only Monday here on Issues Etc. and only 1 hour of this Monday's program. All the more reason you should support Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. You can find out all about the Reformation Club, our monthly or annual donor program, at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses, and you can find everything you need to know about the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. You can join as a confessor, apologist, a reformer, or a patron, and we thank you in advance for your support. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, the Lutheran Study Bible, is all about going deeper into the Word of God. You never, ever go wrong when you go deeper into the Word of God, and the Lutheran Study Bible is a great resource to help you go there. You'll find the cover of the Lutheran Study Bible at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order the Lutheran Study Bible. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Study Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. We need to be vigilant, not only for our own freedoms and our own safety, but because Islam doesn't just represent a political point of view, but also a religious point of view, one that would rob us, if given the opportunity, of not only our faith in Jesus Christ and set it upon a false god, but also rob us of the freedom to speak freely and to proclaim freely the salvation that is in Jesus Christ, our Savior, alone. An even greater threat. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.